Roy Milner, relate.
Can you tell me about food?
Well, food, yes. Certainly it was different to what we had in England. And I suppose it being different initially, I thought, oh, this is great. We used to get little steaks, but they were always dipped in batter, that sort of thing. And you could get a battered steak, a crumb steak, a this steak. But by and large, much of a muchness, very little local, I wouldn't say product, because perhaps, I mean, things like potatoes were probably grown locally anyway, but there was nothing out of the ordinary that you couldn't buy in an ordinary shop here or that you wouldn't get in your rations. Yes, bacon and all that sort of thing.
You mean it was breakfast. Basically English-style food?
Yes, basically cooked by native cooks by and large, or bawachis, which was shortened to a very sweet word which said bobbages. So you had native bobbages, and you would have an English cook sergeant probably over the lot. I don't know that people worried all that much about food, because here again we used to deal with the wallahs. So when you went to breakfast, there would be a pork wallah who would have things like pork kidneys and chops and chitlins and this sort of thing. And you would order, and he would fry it up then and there. You'd put it on your plate and go in and look at what was for breakfast. And it might be bacon, so you'd have bacon with your pork. And no, I don't want tomatoes. You know, I'll have a spoonful of beans and bread and butter. It was much of a muchness, English food, if you like to put it that way, cooked by natives. Except there was this inevitable, everything was in batter. I can't think of anything out of the ordinary. We used to have some peculiar mixes, but then you get that everywhere. For instance, you would go to afternoon tea, and they'd have things like spring onions and jam on the menu, you know. Obviously, I mean, if you want spring onions, you'd have spring onions. If you didn't, then you could have jam. That was the object. But we used to take the mick and say, what, spring onions and jam would be given as kippers with cream next, you know, this sort of thing. I think there were a few things that probably people did miss, and kippers was one of them. People who were kipper lovers used to say, if Knaf go a kipper. I think it was always adequate, as I say. We got by on it. Corned beef, yes, plenty of corned beef, which I never eat anyway, so I didn't live so well that way. But meat was fairly plentiful. And of course, providing you got a good cup of tea. Char was everything, you see. Char with this, char with that. Char at all hours of the day, all night. And the other thing about the food, I must mention this, everything you drink, well, I mean, a made drink, like coffee, tea, this, it always tasted of chlorination. Chlorination was in the water. And we used to say, "Caw, they've been shoveling it in this morning." Of course, you could really taste it. But by lunchtime, you probably had three or four cups of tea by then. By lunchtime, it was back to normal. You know, you couldn't taste it. It was probably just as powerful, but you adapted to the taste and thought nothing of it. That was the one thing I didn't like initially. It took me long to get rid of the dislike, because I thought, no, I must have this tea. You know, char is everything. And even buns, wads is what they're known in the army. Much the same. Gammy, give us a char and a wad. And Gammy would give you a char and a wad. Piala a char, a mug of tea and a wad. And he'd say, at your sap. He'd show you the box and you'd pick one out and say, I'll have that one. And at night time, they used to be round again. You want a steak, you want a this, you want a that. You can have it from the wallah.
Now, these paid for individually, mm-hmm. by you, rather mm-hmm. than laid on by the
oh,
army.
Oh, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was that necessary, or was it just that you felt like it?
Oh, no, it wasn't necessary. I mean, I could have three meals a day here. But if I met somebody in town, say I had my evening meal about 7, if I met somebody in town at 10 o'clock at night and he said, shall we go and have a bite? I'm going to go with him. Not necessarily. But I could tuck it away, perhaps, you know. And we used to do this. We ate the main meal in the evening. That was the great thing. We ate the main meal in the evening. Well, all right, so he didn't think much of the main meal. There's always the charwala. Charwala, bring me a steak, you see. And nice steak, fairly cheap, and you'd have it. Or you'd go down the bazaar and buy one down there. We used to take our dogs with us. People had dogs. Take a dog down to the bazaar and get a piece of meat wrapped up in a piece of paper and put it in the dog's mouth and say, come on, let's take it home. The dog would just trot behind you with it in his mouth. And when he got there, you'd say, go on, then eat it up. And he'd tear the paper off it and eat it. But we would probably buy a steak for ourselves at the same time. Food, I think, was just a passing thing. It was neither this nor that, sort of.
Sometimes when people don't have much to do, they get very interested in their food, think about it a great deal.
I would have thought that it was exactly the opposite with us. At least, I got that opinion amongst the people I mix with. We never bothered much about food. Char, yes. Cup of tea at all times. But we ate fairly regular. That was one of the things. You would, you know, we'd have a breakfast in the summer. You'd have breakfast about till half past four. But breakfast, or chota hazri, as they'd say, was a cup of tea and a biscuit. A fair-sized biscuit, baked, made in the cookhouse. Thick. You'd have that and go on parade. You'd go on parade till about 9 o'clock, half eight to nine. And then it would be breakfast. All right, what's for breakfast? Couldn't care less. Egg, piece of bacon, bread, butter, more char. If you're a musician, you probably had a couple of hours music after that. And he'd say, right, I'll fall out. Straight away, straight to the outside veranda. Gammy, bring me a piala of char. More drink. Because as fast as you drink it, you perspire and it disappears. But the drinking of char was almost a social thing. Everybody, you see, the steps along the outside, everybody sitting on the steps, all drinking char and talking. You know, quite a social event. Lunch, not much, drop of soup, something like this, but nobody really wanted. Then to bed. For an hour or so, until the old call came up, football, hockey, you know, you. And then we'd get up and go to play these games. And as soon as we got back, we'd want char, more char, but it would be afternoon tea, perhaps, and a meal about half six, seven, a main course meal. If you wanted food after that, you could always buy it.
Besides drinking a lot, did you eat extra salt?
Well, you could get salt tablets, which were issued from time to time. A thing which I believe was fading when I first went there, because I can only remember on one occasion having salt tablets issued. And I think it was later in my time in the army that we were issued with ascorbic acid tablets. This is vitamin C or something, I believe. No idea, that was the only part. Yes, I think that was in Malta, not in India. But I think just the mere fact that we kept so active kept us healthy and fit, and that we didn't need these things. There's always plenty of condiments on table if you wanted more salt. You could put it with your food if you like, but not as a general rule did they have these extras because of the climate. When one thinks that you're on the plains and you think that come May we won't be on the plains, we'll be up in the hills. So you've gone to another sort of more temperate climate than what you would have on the plains. Now, you would leave a company to look after the barracks. And after a period, that company would change over with one that had already been up to the hills. Band and drums, so you go up the hills in May and don't come back till September, October. So they have all the period up there. And the biggest event, of course, is meeting the company coming up, marching that company down that's going back. See you in a couple of months, Harry. And then picking up the new company coming up the next day or 2 days later. They would come up and you march them in. And they seemed to know where they were going. We always used to go to Solon. That was our hill station, which is just near Simla. And, of course, it was a short trip up the road on the train, a few more tunnels, and we're at Simla, where there was a big cinema and big bazaars, Viceroy's Palace and all these sort of places. You would have a company stationed at Kasauli, a company stationed at another hill station, and we'd visit. But hiking. So let's have a trot over to Kasauli and see old Charlie and D Company. See? And a couple of hours hike, you'd get to Kasauli, something like this. But I still say, if there's any part of my life that I had to have over again, I'd say, oh, well, let's have the years I spent in India. I thought it was a great life. And I think if you spoke to most people who served in India, they'd say, oh, yes, great life, great life. But no, they weren't interested in why they were there. They were there. What difference does it make? If you know why you're there, you're still there.
You mentioned steak a couple of times. From what animal did the steak derive?
Cows.
I've often heard people telling me that they wondered about where the meat came from.
Well, you see, in places, particularly on the plains, you have government agricultural centres. And there are pedigree animals there. And we just suggest that the progeny of these pedigree bulls or what have you, that's where the steaks came from. The fact that they were nice, reasonably tender. I never heard anybody say, I reckon this is some dead horse. In fact, I think if you told them it was, they'd have said, so what, it's nice, isn't it? You know, that's the sort of thing. I never gave that one of the things I'm quite certain I never gave a thought to. There was a steak, and that was a steak. I just relied on whoever provided it to have provided it from the right place. So you made me think now, some of the things I might have eaten. Old elephant or something like this.
Well, some people had the attitude that the Indians were out to cheat them at all times.
I would go along with that everybody thought the Indians were out to cheat them. But then we were out to cheat the Indians. So, you know, it's a 50-50 bet. I think that to say it came off his grandmother, it was a... it's a bit far-fetched, I would have thought.
Well, and, a horse.
Yeah. Well, all right, a horse. So, all right, so it was a horse. I enjoyed it. That's all I can say.
Did you ever eat curry?
Oh, yes. Good heavens above.
But you said you ate English food.
Yes, but I mean, you can get curry here. My wife makes a marvellous curry. She's not Indian.
No, but I do think that because of the influence of India on Britain rather than that it's a British dish.
Well, I had curry before I ever went to India, I can tell you that. Whether it be that way, I wouldn't disagree with you, it probably was. But we had curries out there. Funny thing was, we used to have curries in the summer, not in the winter. And I once remember remarking about this, probably as a young soldier out there at the time, said, curries in the summer? And they said, oh yes. You see, they have to keep your blood temperature up to what the temperature is outside. some sense in it, I suppose. I'm not a medical type, but I suppose there's some sense in that. The curries, I think, were poor. Since I've come back and I've had curries in this country, I think the curries I had in India were fairly poor, because they tended to be just a hot dish, too hot, many times, and tasting basically of curry itself, rather than, now, we went to our regiment at Gillingham last year sometime, and they put on a choice of dishes for us when we were eating, and there was a complete salad table, it was the gorgeous thing you ever saw, and there was a curry dish. And I couldn't resist the curry. And I'm telling you, there was everything there. The first thing you helped yourself was a plate of rice. And you put everything on that you required. And I said, I'm going to have a bit of everything. And it was the most gorgeous curry you ever did have in your life. Now, I wrote an article on it after we came back and sent it to the regimental journal. And I was so enthused about this, not just me, but many people who had the curry, that I said to the commanding officer that if we had to give a bonus to anybody, it would have to go to the cooks, produced by English cooks. Young lads, they looked to me. They were up there and they're, you know, dishing up. And I thought, my word, that's some curry. But looking back on the curries in India, that's my reaction to them anyway. They tasted too much of just basically curry, which would be mixed up in a gravy and poured over what have you. There didn't seem to be raisins and ground apple and you know, peaches and this sort of thing mixed up in them. So, yes, we had curries, but then one of those things. Lots of native fruit. Have you ever seen mangoes advertised down here? 10 bob a time. Was to pay tuppence and threepence for them in India. Fruit Waller, come here. I have a mango. And you picked yourself out one and, how much? Well, kitna. And he'd say, China sab, four. China sab. I wish to give him three and say, go on, buzz off. Or what's that effect? Three is enough. He didn't bother, as long as you got three. It was probably only two anyway. He put one in his pocket and give two to the contractor, you see. So lots of fruit, and a peculiar thing about fruit and the fruit waller. Fruit waller, you could buy walnuts by the dozen. A dozen walnuts, you see, and you'd have a dozen walnuts. And he'd sit there because other people would be coming, you see. And you would crack these walnuts. This one's a bad one. And you'd say, here, fruit waller, change this, or as we used to say, here, budley this, it's a crab ogie. And he'd take that one, give you another one, you know, and you would bash him open, and every time he came across a bad one, you'd make him change it. So you could probably get, you'd paid, say, tuppence for 12 walnuts, but it had probably cost him 20, because you'd crack them open quick and come across the bad ones, you made him change. But they did that with everything. There was plenty of fruit. There was always plenty of fruit, and the fruit waller always comes with a little bucket of Condy's fluid. So if you buy an apple, you plunk it straight in. You let it bob up and down for a few times, and then take it out and wash it or dry it off and that sort of thing. But you always wash the fruit. Other than that, food wasn't a particular thing that one would have remembered, other than being reminded. Now, what did you think of the food? You know, it isn't saying, "Oh, I remember in India it was this," but it was.
Did you try any Indian food in the bazaars?
I've tried chapatis, which I thought were vile. But I think that I was prejudiced, because I used to watch them make them. And they make them by rolling a little ball of flour and water or what have you, roll it out, and they put it on their hand at that size, and they have a system of doing this with it, and each time they flop it from one hand to the next, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and in the end they've got something that size. And then they sort of bake it or fry it, and they sort of roll it up and say, here I am, and I taste it, and I think, ugh, tasteless. And, but it was because I used to see these black hands going like this, all done by hand. And I think this just put me off. I was a bit fastidious that way. Had they done it without me seeing, it would probably have been totally different. But I'd seen it. And so I was prejudiced before I tasted it. You know, I'd made up my mind I didn't like it. That was the thing. It's much like you buy the things here now. What do they call them here now? Poppadoms. You see, much the same thing. But that was about all. I never fancied anything else because everything else that you saw looked slop. And they don't believe in spoons. They handle everything. You know, that they get food on a leaf, some big leaf or something. You can watch the natives go. They have this leaf and bits of this on there, and they'd sort of screw it up and dip it into this, and you think, ugh. And everything is open. It's like a Winkle stall, you know, fish, everything is open. Flies everywhere. There's a chap always going like this with the fly swat and keeping the flies away. It didn't appeal to me, and I don't know of many people that did, because we could go to our contractors, and on occasions there were things like the YM clubs, very few and far between, that we could go to and get a meal if a meal was wanted. But one of the things we didn't have, that was chips with everything. And sitting round talking at night, you know, it was talking about what you were going to do when you go home. I'm going to have fish and chips every night for a month. Because you didn't get fish and chips. And these were things that they visualised, you know, fish and chips. It's almost like the Arbisto thing. I don't know whether I ever said I'm going to have this, I'm going to have that. I seem to be quite content with what I was having. And I suppose not having that sort of home background was another thing that felt out of it a bit when they used to talk about home, actually. So I contented myself with the food that was there and had my likes and dislikes, which I think every individual has or had. You can't say that you like everything that you ever see, nor can I. And that's the way it goes.
You mentioned paying the man less than he asked for the mango. Did it take you a while to get used to that, or did somebody explain to you how to do it?
Takes a while. Fairly short while, I must say. Because, as I said earlier, when one arrives, you arrive among people that you knew 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. Hello. And you have immediately got a mucker, as they call them, so that you and I go everywhere together. So you're my mucker, I'm your mucker. And it takes a very short time for my mucker, who's been out there 2 or 3 years, to lead me into this wiggly path of rooking the natives, kicking them when nobody's looking, and this sort of thing. Very short period of time. Once you have done it, I think, looking back, that one figured that this was the done thing anyway, and that you were a bit of a mug if you didn't do it. And having said that, I think that most people did do it at one time or another. You may have got a conscience once in a while and said to the bloke, oh, I'm going to give you charana. I think one of the things I ought to mention about this, Christmas time used to come, and all these wallahs used to come along with cigars and say, Merry Christmas, Seb, and give you a cigar. Cheap, cheerful old thing, but they give you a cigar. And we used to say, all right, then, Gammy, get all generous at Christmas, you see. If you gave him four annas, fourpence, for nothing, just for a buck cheese, for Christmas, God blimey, I think you could have had everything off his stall for the next 6 months. And he would get this, because we always had our own tea wallahs or char wallahs. HQ's was always HQ's. And it was Gammy. Our fella was called Gammy, because he had one Gammy hand. It's just the nickname Gammy, he knew. And he used to say, Chawallah, Gammy coming. Come walking across the Mire Dam, you know, Gammy coming. And we'd all be out there with our mugs and say, come on, Gammy, you lazy old so-and-so. But Christmas time, we used to treat them. There's no doubt about it, we used to treat them at Christmas time. The majority of us, I don't say everybody, but the majority of us used to get largesse and give them fourpence or something like this. Well, if you take a company of 200 people, if only half of them gave bakshis, which is the name, and if they didn't give four, if they only gave two annas, it's quite a few rupees he's picked up for free. And you were, oh yes, Darkie Sab, you can have kitab next week and the rest. So I think that way, they had a sneaking regard for us, and in our own way, all right, perhaps it meant a bit crude and ruthless, we had a certain regard for them. We had our Gunga Dins, our water boys, or beasties as they're called. When we went on route marches, they were with us. But they would know where we were going, and they would know where we would take a rest. And they would be there, and the char would be made, and the char would be hot. And you'd stop, char wallahs there, drink the tea. You know, this was camp followers. It was a great thing.
Did you know about the different classes and castes?
Oh yes, yes we did, because. If my memory serves me right on this, there was some